organization. Learn what you and your agency need to know at the Telework Center on federalnewsradio.com, keyword telework, sponsored by Tanberg.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Going to have a really good Follow the Money show today for you. I'm going to be talking exclusively in the hour with Tom O'Rourke. He's a very well-known attorney in the Washington area and a specialist in estate planning. And that's going to be the subject of it. We have a number of email questions from people that we're going to deal with, some really good questions. And Tom, I think the last time you were on, I prefaced this by saying I think the way we met was many years ago at a conference somewhere in California, and they had a whole series of workshops and speakers, and I planned to, I picked about 10 that looked interesting, and I was going to, you know, give a few minutes to each one, and that way I could punch my ticket, say I'd done it, justify my existence to my employers, and then go on about my way. And I went into yours, and I stayed for the entire time. I was just fascinated by it because of what you were talking about, and it was very much along the lines of what we're going to talk about today, but estate planning.
Well, when you started that story, Mike, I was afraid you were going to say you stayed the whole time because you sat down in the back of the room and fell asleep.
Well, there was none of that. None of that. I mean, people were beating down the doors, I know, for your second session. But, Tom, first off, a really basic question. What's an estate?
An estate is anything you own. If you own anything, if that shirt on your back is all you have an estate. It may be a very modest estate, or it may be a very significant estate, but if anybody owns anything, they have an estate.
Well, talking with Tom and Jane earlier, they were helping us plug the show, and they brought up some good points, but if you live in the Washington area, if you work for the government, particularly maybe if you're a double-income family, or have any other job, you and own some property, you probably are a lot better off than you think.
That's true. If you live in this area, have a home, have a pension plan, which all of your listeners do if they work for the federal government, you have a thrift savings plan, you have a little bit of life insurance, at least on paper, you're what the government considers to be rich. And taxes can enter into your planning, but even if you don't have that, you still need an estate plan. Even if the only person in your life you care about is yourself, everybody needs some basic estate plan.
What happens if you don't have a plan? You just die. Maybe you wrote out a will 15 years ago, or maybe you didn't.
Well, there are really a number of issues. What happens to you while you're alive, and what happens to you when you die? But if you die with nothing, no will, then every state, no matter where you live, has a plan for you. And the plan has a one-size-fits-all estate plan. It distributes your property in a specified way. Now, most typically, your property is distributed equally among family members. If you're married, usually your spouse inherits part of your property and your children inherit part of the property. If you aren't married, it usually goes to your kids if you have them. And if you have nobody, your estate can end up going to the state where you live.
Now, when you're talking about an estate planner, I know we mentioned this at an earlier time. Is there a set fee? Because Jane Norris was making the point that this can be a very expensive business.
It can be. Mm-hmm. It can be very expensive. It can also be very inexpensive. The one tip I would give your listeners is if they call somebody and say, what's it going to cost? And they get an immediate quote, they probably don't want to use that person.
Really? Okay.
Because estate planning is highly specific. It depends on your particular situation, your needs, your concerns. In my experience in the D.C. area, it can cost anywhere from $500 to $50,000, depending on the complexity of your plan. For most people, it's usually anywhere from $500 to $3,000 or $4,000. Depending on how complex their situation is.
So somebody will take a look at what you've got, and then they will draw up a blueprint for you as this is how it's going to go, or this is how it should go?
That's right. They sit down and they talk to you and say, Mike, what are your concerns? Mm-hmm. And you tell them, and then you say, okay, well, you know, what assets do you have, and how do you want those assets to be distributed? And they'll put together a plan. And many times within that framework, people have many different concerns that can affect the complexity of their plan. For example, do you have small children? Or if you don't have small children, do you have teenage children? If you've got $500,000 in life insurance, do you want to give an 18-year-old $500,000? Those types of issues play into what you want to do. What happens if you have an adult child who's handicapped and can't manage for themselves? What happens if you want to take steps to minimize taxes? These are all particular issues that need to be addressed in an estate plan.
How do you know if you have an estate, if you need a plan, or would just a simple will do?
Well, for many people, a simple will is satisfactory. If you're in a situation where probably the most typical estate plan that I deal with is it says, you know, I love my spouse, I want to leave everything to my spouse, and when my spouse dies, I want everything to go to my kids. That's a pretty simple situation. On the other hand, if the total value of your assets, you and your spouse together, is more than $1 million, and I know that's a lot of money, but for folks who live in this area, live in the D.C. metro area, and they own a home, and they have a job, and they have a little bit of life insurance, many times those folks live paycheck to paycheck, but have an estate that's worth more than $1 million. The reason that's important is because at least in Maryland and D.C., if you have an estate that's worth more than $1 million, you can have an estate tax liability that could easily be avoided by doing some very basic tax planning.
Now, I'm probably confusing this. An estate plan is one thing. Does that include, is that a package? Would that include something like a will, like a medical directive?
Well, the thing that I tell everybody that I talk to, in my view, everybody needs three very basic documents as part of their estate plan. When most people think about estate planning, they think about a will, and that's certainly an important part. And that is something people need, or some people decide to use a revocable trust. The second thing that everybody needs is a medical directive. What happens if you lose the ability to make decisions for yourself? Who's going to step in and make those decisions for you? So you should have an advanced medical directive that addresses that. And then third, what happens if you can't manage your finances? You can't pay your bills. You can't file your tax returns. Who's going to step in and take over? You need a durable financial power of attorney to appoint somebody to manage your finances. And in my view, everybody needs those three very basic documents, whether they have a lot of money, a little bit of money, or no money at all. The issue about whether you need somebody to act on your behalf, whether you become incapacitated, has got nothing to do with how much money you have. If all of us are, you know, just a moment away from becoming incapacitated, for anybody who drives on 395 or the Beltway or 270, you can be involved in an accident just as easily if you're 18 years old or 80 years old.
Yeah, that's one thing that I find interesting when people talk about things like long-term care insurance or other forms of insurance or something like this. They're 25, they're immortal, they're invincible, but in some cases they're probably at more risk than people in their 50s.
Well, probably the most highly publicized case of a disabled individual was Terri Schiavo. Mm-hmm. She went through a horrible situation prior to her death. And when she became incapacitated, when she became comatose, she was 29 years old. And, I mean, that's certainly an extreme case. It's not typical, but it can happen.
Well, the other one that comes to mind is Superman.
Oh, yes, Christopher Reeve.
Christopher Reeve, very rich, right. and as I understand it, by the after his death and at the time of his death, they were practically penniless. They'd spent it all down.
Well, he required virtually round-the-clock care, and that care is very expensive. I know folks in this area who have to spend time in a nursing home. Costs of anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000 a month are not unusual. And even if you have a lot of money, if you're spending $10,000 a month for your most basic care, you can go through that money very quickly.
Does long-term care insurance figure into your estate planning?
Well, long-term care insurance certainly has an impact. And one of the things that I typically advise people when I talk to them is that's something you need to address. You need to address things that you're concerned about. And many times people are concerned about facing a long-term illness and how they're going to pay for that. And long-term care insurance is designed to address that concern. Now, it's not something, I know nothing about the insurance. I don't sell insurance, but I deal with financial advisors who know a lot about that. And for many folks, in fact, probably for almost all folks, long-term care insurance is a type of insurance that most of us need.
Everybody needs, and it's the kind of thing you hope every cent of the premium is wasted, don't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. You hope you never, it's like all insurance. You hope you buy it, and whatever you're insuring against doesn't happen.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you something about the medical directive, and I think this. I'm, I have four adult children, no spouse. Having a medical directive really takes them off the hook, doesn't it?
Well, it takes them off the hook when it comes to making the decision to pull the plug.
Right.
If you have a medical directive, one of the things you do, you state what, if any, treatment you would want if you're terminally ill and in a vegetative state.
Mm-hmm.
And most people say, I don't want my life artificially prolonged. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be hooked up to a feeding tube. Don't want to be hooked up to a breathing machine. And that's your decision. You're not asking your children to make that decision. You've made it for them. And your health care providers should follow that decision.
Well, I know when my mother was terminally ill, one of my sons and his wife really did most of the heavy lifting, much more than I did. But she had one of those directives, and it was a great relief to everybody because there was minimal guilt.
And guilt's always a big issue.
Yeah.
It's very easy for you to say, I don't want any treatment.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot harder for you to say, I'm going to take a step that's going to end the life of somebody I love very much.
Let me take a short break here. I'm talking with Tom O'Rourke here on WFED. And when we get back, I want to address some specific questions we've had from listeners. So we'll be right back here on 1500 AM.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
The longer you wait to adopt IP version 6, the greater your cybersecurity risk. Here's Doug Montgomery, manager of the Internet and Scalable Systems Group at NIST.
Hijacking blocks of addresses for the purposes of launching spam and other kinds of activities is an event that we see on the net. As we get to the point where there aren't available V4 addresses, I think we'll begin to see it more and more. That's an angle that people don't discuss much. What are the cyber implications of not deploying V6?
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Hi, this is Coach Lynn. In the Holy Land, there has been a long-standing battle with bloodshed and tears. We have a very special broadcast this Saturday. His Excellency Ambassador Ericat from Palestine in a rare exclusive interview right here at Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, Saturday from 11 to 12. Prosper.
Are you in the cloud? Whether you're managing your software on-premise, in the cloud, or a bit of both, Microsoft offers you unprecedented choice. The choice to manage the mission-critical computing resources your agency needs now with the vision, flexibility, and security features to meet many of the ever-evolving federal requirements. Cloud services from Microsoft. We're all in. Are you in?
Learn more about Microsoft's cloud services. Visit Microsoft.com/govcloud. That's Microsoft.com/govcloud.
Isn't it funny how just when you think you've had the best time of your life, life makes you think differently? Remember your first kiss? How would you top that? And that summer before college. But then college came and poof, you almost forgot those times you would never forget. There was the romance that swept you off your feet and the wedding that took everyone's breath away. And the only thing more amazing than how beautiful your babies were was what wonderful people they turned out to be. Well, guess what? If you think life just couldn't get better, we've got news for you. It can. And that's the best reason for getting a mammogram. At Kaiser Permanente, more women do. And that's how we know regular screens are one sure way to make certain you live long and thrive. You want to know what happens next? Go for your next mammogram and stick around. Things are going to get a lot more interesting. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
To learn more, go to kp.org/mymammogram. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Daily Debrief. We continue our week-long series, HR Reinvented. This afternoon, Professor David Lewis, he offers insights about how government recruits, and he says feds can do better, and a remarkable initiative that seeks to tap the wisdom of crowds for government procurement. We'll talk to the team behind GSA's Better Buy Project. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorbeck and Amy Morris, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. We're talking about estate planning today and the things that, you probably should be doing. I hope you've done them, but if not, hope we can help you. Some of the things you should do to preserve your assets for yourself, for your heirs, and to make sure that the money goes where you want it to go and how you want it to go, and avoiding probate, the horror we've all heard about. I don't know anybody who has actually read Bleak House, but we all know that that's the concept. It takes 50 years to probate a will and whatnot. Tommy got a very detailed and I think timely email from an IRS employee, and she says, question, concern. I am a single parent with three children, and I'm looking for a recommendation on how to plan for the financial stability of an adult child who lives with me and relies on me for his financial and medical support due to a disability. He receives a monthly disability payment from the state of Virginia, but it is a meager amount. I know that if I leave him as beneficiary, I can jeopardize his future support from the government, but that is about all I know. What's the proper type of trust or legal papers to set up? Is there a title for the type of attorney or professional that would specialize in this area of work? Do you know of someone that you personally would recommend and would use yourself if you personally had the situation? I need peace of mind. I appreciate your advice and assistance. Wonderful. Sort of covers the waterfront, doesn't it?
It does, and she addresses a problem that is not terribly uncommon. If individuals have an adult child who is handicapped, they love that child very much, and they're concerned about what's going to happen to the child in the event of the parent's death. They also know that their first instinct is to leave their assets to the child so the child could be taken care of, but many times that can be a horrible mistake. For many handicapped adults, we have a support system through various government programs. Many handicapped adults receive benefits like SSI or Medicaid or other benefits like that. That really is their support system. But if you leave an individual assets, they have too many assets to qualify for those programs. All of those programs are needs-based. So leaving your assets to a disabled adult individual can be a big mistake. The typical way to address that is to create a trust commonly referred to as a special needs trust, or sometimes it's called a supplemental needs trust. What you do is you create a trust which at your death comes into existence. When you die, assets from your estate go into the trust. The trust is a separate legal and taxable entity. It's managed for the benefit of the handicapped child. Typically, it's managed by a family member, an adult sibling, or somebody else who has the best interest of the handicapped adult child. That is one of their main focuses. And what it provides is you use the funds in the trust to supplement the government assistance. For example, if a child is living in a group home, and if their income goes above a certain level, they don't qualify for that group home. So what you do is you create the trust that can be used to pay for the cable TV or pay for the internet service or send the child on a vacation, do things like that. And that is a relatively common concern. It's a very common concern for anybody who has a handicapped adult child.
And so the idea is, if you're in a situation like this and you have a handicapped child, and you want to leave them, say you leave them $200,000, if you just leave it to them, then immediately they're off Medicaid and all
that's
these
right.
other. Okay, so that the state knows that somehow and takes them off or
well,
somebody.
You're required to submit information to whomever's providing that assistance on a regular basis, And you know, when if you have assets, you have to answer those questions truthfully.
But you, if you put it in, I think you said a special needs trust or a supplemental needs trust, then it's for you, but you don't own it. You don't control it.
That's true.
And again, as you say, someone you designate, preferably a relative, a loved one, somebody mm-hmm. that has the best interests at heart, and they then pay the bills and the money comes out of that. Is it in a trust like that? Could someone invest it?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Typically, they do. The goal is mm-hmm. is to take the money and at least produce enough income to care for the child and hopefully grow.
Yeah.
So then when the child dies, the trust specifies how the property gets distributed.
Okay, and the person who's designated is the executor?
It's a trustee.
Trustee, okay.
And many times, that's the really difficult problem. Who do I pick to manage this trust? It's got to be somebody who's absolutely trustworthy. It should ideally be somebody who has the best interest of the beneficiary, the handicapped adult child, as their main concern.
Well, somebody like you or me with adult children, in my case, four. I think you have two.
Or I have two. Yes.
If I make one of them, what are the perils and the pitfalls of picking one child over the other? Is there a way to do it?
The short answer is no.
Yeah.
I usually what I tell people is first make a judgment as to whom you think would be the best suited to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the concerns is the sibling who's going to have to manage the property going to become resentful? Does that sibling have a spouse who's going to become resentful? They're going to say, Mike, you're spending too much time on your brother. You need to be more concerned about your wife and your own kids.
Excuse me. Take a break here and hold that thought, as you say, because this is very interesting, especially for somebody with four kids. But we'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Checking your daily TSP ticker. The latest numbers from April 6th, 2010. The G Fund is unchanged at $13.23. The F Fund rises 0.02 at $13.50. The C Fund is up 0.03 at $14.17. The S Fund rises 0.08 at $18.65. And the I Fund loses 0.01 at $18.90. Your L Funds are higher. The 2040 up 0.02 at $16.54. The 2030 up 0.02 at $16.26. The 2020 rises 0.02 at $15.98. The 2010 gains 0.01 at $15.56. And the L Income picks up 0.01 at $14.17. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What is the Global Partnership Initiative? How is the U.S. Department of State leveraging private-public partnerships to achieve foreign policy goals? Listen next week as these questions and more will be explored with Ambassador Elizabeth Frawley Bagley, Special Representative, Global Partnership Initiative at the U.S. Department of State, next week. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Are you accountable for improving efficiency and productivity? Then the 2010 DoD Service-Oriented Architecture Symposium is for you. Learn about SOA best practices and discipline from baseball's Iron Man Cal Ripken, Union Pacific CIO Lyndon Tennyson, Apprentice winner Kelly Perdue, DoD Assistant CIO David Wennergren, DoD Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer Beth McGrath, and many others. Be at the Crystal City Sheraton on April 21st and 22nd. Register at soasymposium.com. That's soasymposium.com.
Introducing HalfPriceDC.com, your gateway to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more, all at half price. This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to Reston National Golf Course, Northern Virginia's favorite classic golf course, Fontina Grill in Rockville, delightful Italian cuisine prepared fresh daily, and Extra Virgin in Shirlington with a beautiful new patio for the ultimate dining experience. See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
Become a citizen of Natstown and make your dollar go further at Nationals Park. Get your writ on and watch the Nats battle the Brewers April 16th, 17th, and 18th. There isn't a better way to celebrate the weekend. Friday, Jackie Robinson Day. Friday and Saturday, Miller Light Party Night. Sunday, Family Fun Day with pregame autographs and postgame kids run the bases. Spend less, get more, go Nats. Visit Nationals.com or call 888-632-NATS.
If you've been around Washington as long as I have, you know the one constant is change. The players change, laws change. If you're a federal retiree or soon to be one, you need to know that some of those changes could affect your retirement future. There's one association fighting to make sure that doesn't happen, and that's NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. If you work for or have worked for Uncle Sam, you need NARF. NARF is the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. Or call them at 800-627-3394, 800-627-3394, and have them send you more information.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Tom O'Rourke. He's a Washington area attorney. And Tom, would you want to give out your email address?
Sure.
You were interested in talking to you? Yeah.
Sure. It's long, but I'll be glad to give it out. It's T O'Rourke, O-R-O-U-R-K-E, at Miles, M-I-L-E-S, Stockbridge, S-T-O-C-K-B-R-I-D-G-E. com.
And I think we'll link that in the column, too, so that people can get in touch with you if they have follow-on questions. Fascinating one for me is father of four adult children, and you're talking about if you decide to go that route, which one of those children, what are the traits? And I think one time we were talking about this, and you said all things being equal, which they never are, but all things being equal, go for the oldest simply because of the firstborn, because they're the kids are used to taking orders?
That's the advice I typically give people. Many times when I say to people, do you have one specific individual in mind? And many times they will. One child will be particularly suited to do that because they are even temperament. They always do things fairly. They get along with their other siblings. And in many instances, they say, well, all of my kids satisfy that characteristic. And then secondly, I would say pick somebody who's close by, who's going to be in the area where the estate's going to be administered. And then, assuming that's they're all in the same area, then pick the oldest one.
I remember talking to a friend one time, and he said he had been the executor for his best friend, his childhood friend. He's been the executor for his best friend's father. And he said he was glad to do it, glad to help. He'll never do it again. He said it was a nightmare.
Well, it can be a thankless task. Many times the beneficiaries of an estate are constantly on the phone saying, when are you going to get off your butt, do something, and give me my money? Now, keep in mind, these are probably people that could care less about the person while they were alive, the person who died and left the money. But it can be very annoying. You've got to advise somebody that comes with the territory of being an executor or administrator of an estate.
Well, the 800-pound elephant in the room, too, is the in-law, the spouse.
Oh, always, always. One of the things I always tell people is, look, you may have total confidence in your son or daughter, but let me ask you a question. Does their spouse have any influence on decisions they make? And they always do.
Of course.
Your spouse always has a big impact on what you do. So your son may get along with all of his siblings, but maybe his wife doesn't. So those are all things that you take into consideration when you're deciding who am I going to leave in charge of my estate and who am I going to ask to administer things after I'm gone.
I mean, that seems to me, and I think everybody can identify with this. They've known it. They've seen situations, seen families split up over petty things, petty amounts of money, who was left what. But this seems to me like it's an ad for getting an outsider, a professional, an outsider, somebody like you.
Many times people do that. They'll ask their lawyer to do it. They'll ask a bank or a trust company. One of the advantages lawyers have, nobody likes lawyers anyway.
Right, you start out that way.
So when I call people and say, no, I'm not going to do it, they'll talk about that miserable SOB lawyer, but that's okay. I'm going to do my job, and I'm going to do it fairly, and I'm a little more familiar with the procedure than many people. So many times people do that. It works the same way when you pick a bank or a trust company. They know what needs to be done. They'll get it done, and they don't care if people don't like them. Their job is not to be liked. It's to administer the estate fairly. The obvious disadvantage of doing that, that there are costs involved with it. And many people would say, well, my children could handle it just as easily, and we can avoid that cost.
Huh.
So,
right.
those are the trade-offs.
Well, now, we were talking about doing a trust.
Right.
And you said, I believe, early on, if you call up somebody and say, how much is it going to cost, if they quote you an exact figure, you probably don't want them because they don't know the complexities of your situation.
Well, there's anybody in the world can pull out a form and fill in the blanks.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do that, you don't need a lawyer.
Right.
Go to a legal supply store or go to the internet, and you will get a form, which is a one-size-fits-all program. And unfortunately, we don't have one-size-fits-all lives. Your life is different than mine. We have different concerns. And so if somebody quotes you a specific fee, obviously what they're going to do is they're going to fit your situation into their form.
Yeah, either that or have you ever heard the term cost overrun?
Yes.
And I think you said in that case it could run anywhere from $500 to $5,000.
That's a typical range in this area, and I realize it's not a very narrow range.
Right, but. Right. Well, now, in the case of somebody who was going to be your executor, which is a different thing, might be the same person that does your trust or your plan, but then this person's going to be the executor. Is there, is there a range on that? Is there a fixed fee or something?
Most states have a standard. Unfortunately, that standard is the person is entitled to reasonable compensation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously something people can disagree about. Locally, in Maryland, Virginia, and D.C., Maryland has an upper limit. Maryland says the maximum an executor can be compensated is whatever you say in the will or 3.6% of the value of your estate. So in Maryland, 3.6% is the figure that I tell people. In Virginia, the standard is the executor is entitled to reasonable compensation. Typically, the Virginia courts have said 5% of the value of the estate is reasonable.
Let me ask you about that when we come back. We need to take a short break here. Talking with Tom O'Rourke on estate planning here on WFED 1500 AM.
I'll never forget cave reconnaissance in Afghanistan. My sergeant would tie rope around my waist and lower me into total darkness. Not fun. But things change with the iRobot PackBot. Now, with the robot serving as point man, my squad stays safer on dangerous missions.
More than 3,000 PackBot robots have been delivered worldwide.
By the way, we're using that old rope as a clothesline back at camp.
For more information, visit iRobot.com. Protecting troops. Saving lives. Making a difference. iRobot.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Caps fans, join the Caps Mobile Club for your chance to win a Caps autographed jersey. Text Jersey to 43803 to enter now. As a Caps Mobile Club member, you'll receive breaking news and special offers delivered right to your phone. Check scores and stats from your phone's web browser and maybe win that signed jersey. Text Jersey to 43803 to enter now. For more info on all Caps Mobile offerings, visit the Fan Zone section of WashingtonCaps.com. Stay Caps connected with Caps Mobile.
Mike Causey, welcome back to your turn. We've lost the celestial music today, which has broken our pattern here, so forgive us for that. Talking with Tom O'Rourke, he's a Washington area attorney, a specialist in estate planning, and we've been talking about wills and trusts. And during the break, you mentioned a good case. When we left, we were talking about who do you want to handle your estate. And obviously, you say my children, my firstborn, or what have you. Then in comes the problem of in-laws. The kids may get along beautifully. Their spouses may not get along so beautifully. Obviously, you carve out your own family and go your own way. And you can see differences after they've been married in just a few years. Then's the issue of hiring a professional to handle it, a bank or an attorney or something, someone like that. And as you said, in your case, you're a lawyer. Everybody hates lawyers. So you start out, you're going to hang tough in there. But you mentioned during the break the Jack Kent Cook statement. I think
right.
A lot of people, even if you're not a football fan, you know that he was the legendary longtime owner of the Redskins.
Well, I love to bring up the Jack Kent Cook case when I'm talking about estate planning because it raises so many issues. And it's usually somebody that most people have heard about. And in this particular context, you'd ask me how much an executor is compensated. And I said in Virginia, it's a reasonable fee, generally not to exceed 5%. Well, in the Jack Kent Cook case, the executors asked for compensation in excess of 5%. And they said this was an extraordinarily difficult estate to administer. As you may remember, there was a lot of litigation with Jack's widow, Marlena, and whether or not she was entitled to a share of his estate. And in that particular situation, the court said, yes, because of all the difficulties involved in this estate, a figure in excess of 5% was warranted, and they awarded compensation higher than that. But 5% at least gives you a benchmark in Virginia as to what your executor may charge if you use somebody other than a family member.
Right, and that's so it's 3.6 in Maryland and up to 5 in Virginia.
And in D.C., the courts sometimes go as high as 8%. But again, it's reasonable, and it usually depends on specific circumstances. If somebody objects, the court will hold a hearing and determine what's reasonable. If nobody objects, compensation of up to 8% in D.C. could be awarded.
Probably a dumb question, but you may live in Maryland, work in D.C., or live in Virginia, work in Maryland, but you do all of your legal work in the state of your residence where you vote, where you have a driver's license.
That's right. It's the state of your domicile,
okay.
The place you intend to call home.
We had an email from a man who said he has a domestic partner, another man, and they're committed, serious. And what should they be doing, if anything? What can they do? What should they be doing?
Well, like any other individual, they can do whatever they want. The basic rule of estate planning is this is your life we're talking about. You get to decide how your assets are distributed, who makes decisions for you. So for somebody who's in a same-sex relationship, the advice I would give them would be the same as anybody else. Both you and your partner need a will. Both you and your partner need a financial power of attorney. Both you and your partner need an advanced health care directive. Now, there's been a lot of publicity. There have been a number of issues involving that in the D.C. area because, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, D.C. recognized the validity of gay marriages very recently. And Maryland's attorney general recently issued an opinion where he said, Maryland will recognize the validity of a same-sex marriage in applying Maryland laws. But even though those statutes have passed, there's still many issues that arise. For example, what happens if you have a domestic partner but you don't have a will? What do they inherit? Well, under D.C. law, your domestic partner has the same rights your spouse would have. In Maryland and Virginia, your domestic partner has no rights. And even though Maryland will recognize the validity of a same-sex marriage, they don't treat that same-sex partner as married for purposes of applying the laws as to who inherits. In D.C., your domestic partner has a right to make health care decisions for you if you haven't done anything. But my advice to everybody, regardless of the type of relationship you're in, don't allow these decisions to be made for you by the state of your residence. You can make the decisions yourself, and what you need to do is you need to put together a very basic estate plan that protects your rights and implements your wishes.
My guess here, and it's strictly a guess, I haven't looked at the numbers, is that most people, when they're doing a medical directive or signing it, they say they don't want to be resuscitated if they're in a vegetative state. They you know, just pull the plug and it's over with. That would be my guess that most people do that. And I would also guess that, as you mentioned earlier, that by doing it, by making this decision one way or the other, either resuscitate me or don't, but you have removed a tremendous burden from the loved one that's going to have to otherwise make that decision, the guardian, your children, your child, your spouse, and it seemed to me it would take a major burden from their shoulders at a time when they're going to probably be racked with guilt anyhow.
That's absolutely true, and your off-the-cuff guess as to what most people say is consistent with my experience. There are people, religious beliefs enter into these matters, and for people who have specific religious beliefs, most major religions usually will publish some basic guidance as to what your religion teaches. So if that's a matter of concern to you, you may want to talk to your clergyman before you talk to your lawyer. But the law in every state is you have the right to decide what, if any, treatment you will receive. But the problem is making sure you exercise that right. If you don't, you get into situations like the Terry Schiavo situation.
How long did she linger?
Over 10 years.
Yeah,
10 years.
10 years in a vegetative state, and then ultimately the law moved in.
After numerous lawsuits, and I'm sure after countless millions of dollars in expenses and legal fees, she did what many people would say they want done right from the outset. But because Terry didn't have an advance directive, nobody knew what she wanted. Her husband said she didn't want her life artificially prolonged. Her parents said, yes, she did. She wanted every step taken to keep her alive. And that's the problem when you don't do anything. Everybody but you, everybody who has an opinion on the matter, gets to voice that opinion while you're lingering.
And, you know, I would guess, again, a guess, that in that case, probably the husband was right and the parents were right from their viewpoint.
Oh, absolutely. You know? I am sure both the husband and the parents were acting completely in good faith, and it's tragic. It was tragic for everybody involved.
What haven't we touched on here talking about estate planning?
Well, we've certainly touched on the basics, Mike, about one of the things that I like to emphasize to people. When they hear the word estate, the first thing they think about, oh, he's talking to rich people.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really not. If the only person you care about is yourself, you need an estate plan. And certainly, if you are rich, if you have an estate that's worth more than $1 million, you need to at least think about estate taxes, because it's relatively easy to avoid estate taxes if you do some basic planning.
Great. Be right back here on 1500 AM talking about estate planning.
Is a leading provider of innovative technologies and solutions focused on mission-critical national security programs. Due to recent contract awards supporting the intelligence community, ManTech has tremendous career opportunities for systems engineering and cybersecurity professionals with top-secret SCI with Apollograph clearances in Northern Virginia and Hanover, Maryland. ManTech needs professionals skilled in program control, financial management, space systems engineering, security architecture design and assessment, program protection, and technical counterintelligence, and many other areas. ManTech has been ranked as one of the top 10 military-friendly employers by GI Jobs magazine.
If you want a career with a leading company supporting critical national security missions in Northern Virginia and Hanover, Maryland, apply for openings today at mantech.com/careers. That's mantech.com/careers. ManTech is an equal opportunity employer.
Nothing is more certain than death and taxes. You've heard that expression. But there's something else you can count on. Realizing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Listen to Wayne Zell every Saturday at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will explain how the more you know about taxes, estate planning, and business planning, the better prepared you will be for your journey to wealth and freedom. Listen to Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio. Because you can count on more than death and taxes.
Hi, this is Coach Lynn. In the Holy Land, there has been a long-standing battle with bloodshed and tears. We have a very special broadcast this Saturday. His Excellency Ambassador Arakat from Palestine in a rare, exclusive interview right here at Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., Saturday from 11 to 12. Prosper.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of TMR. TMR is a small, disadvantaged, woman-owned business. We provide enterprise architecture, governance, and IT operational support to DOD and civilian agencies, including OSD, DIA, DOJ, and DHS. Our contract vehicles include GSA 8A STARS, IT-70, MOBUS, FEDSIM, Alliant, and Navy Seaport E. For your agency's IT needs, visit TMR at TMRHQ.com or call 703-323-1700.
Be sure to mark April 29th on your calendar and attend the Excellence.gov Awards luncheon at the JW Marriott Hotel in Washington. These awards will recognize the game changers, those federal programs and their managers who have achieved exceptional results in managing IT in support of the government's mission and serving citizens. On April 29th, the winners will join the over 150 programs that have received the Excellence.gov Award since 2002. For more information, go to actgov.org/excellence.gov2010.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Tom O'Rourke. He's a specialist in an attorney who specializes in estate planning, and we've got a very good primer here, and I really appreciate you coming in, Tom. During the break, you mentioned the T word. I wasn't going to bring it up. I have a decent humanity strain in me, but you wanted to talk about taxes, so
I did. Okay. I asked Mike during the break if I could say just a few brief words about income taxes, and the reason I want to do that is because the income tax filing deadline is coming up in a little less than 2 weeks, and I deal with so many people who get in so much trouble and owe so much money because they don't file their tax returns on time. Your tax return is due. It's got to be postmarked by April 15th. You can get an automatic 4-month extension merely by asking for it. You have to fill out a form called a Form 4868, which is available on the IRS website. You can even fill it out on the internet and submit it on the internet. And if you do that, you get an extension of 4 months until September. And if you wish to get a further extension, you can usually do that. Now, having said that,
but there's a catch, right?
There is a catch. You have to pay any tax that you estimate to be due. Now, why should you do this? Well, the reason you should do it, even if you don't have the money to pay the extension, still request it. Because if you don't, there's a penalty of a late filing penalty of 5% per month. So if you wait to file your tax return until September, that's 4 months beyond the filing. Excuse me, that's 5 months beyond the filing deadline. Your liability has increased by 20% because of that penalty. Now, you can ask the IRS to waive it if you can establish a reasonable cause. But the one bit of advice I always give to people is never make your financial plans based on the anticipated benevolence of the IRS. I mean, maybe
you worked
have
for the
a
IRS,
good,
didn't you?
I did. I worked for the IRS for a long time, and all the folks I worked with there and all the people I deal with on a regular basis are good, decent folks who'll give you a break if they can. Mm-hmm. But the law is relatively inflexible, and it's so easy to avoid this penalty by just requesting an extension.
Yeah. Well, and the I guess in that case, not paying is sort of like lying, perjury. The ultimate ultimate sin is the cover-up.
That's right.
And I know when I first heard that, much younger and naive, when I heard you could get a four-month extension, I thought, this is wonderful. Why doesn't everybody do this?
I don't have to worry about this. I'll take care of that later this summer.
You brought up the ugly fact that they have to pay the taxes or pay the estimated taxes. But
That's right.
That's a good plan. Now, and again, on this estate planning thing, speaking of taxes, this is a way to minimize the tax bite if you put your money into a trust or something like
right.
that.
Right. There are a whole lot of steps you can take to avoid the estate tax. And a very common way is to set up a relatively simple type of a trust called a bypass trust, where you take part of your assets, you put them in a trust for the benefit of your spouse and your family, and then when they die, the assets in that trust are not subject to tax. By using that sort of a mechanism, it allows any married couple to avoid any estate tax at all if they have an estate that's worth less than $2 million. Now, there are a lot of folks in the D.C. area who don't consider themselves rich that may have an estate of more than $2 million. And if your estate is more than that, you need to do a little more sophisticated estate planning. But for most people, if your estate's more than $2 million, you have a problem, but it's a good problem to have.
Again, naive question. If you set up an estate like that and you say, here's the Tom O'Rourke Trust or whatever you call it, is everything you have automatically in it?
No. No. If you decide to set up a trust, the trust is only effective. It only works if you fund it. You got to transfer your assets into it. You got to put your house into it, your bank account, your credit union account.
Is there a form for that?
Well, you've got to deal with it on an asset by asset basis. Mm-hmm. If you have an account with your credit union, you got to go to the credit union and change the name of the account from Mike Causey to Mike Causey Trust.
I see. Okay.
If you own real estate, you got to file a new deed with the whoever records mm-hmm. deeds in the state where you live. There are some extra steps you have to take. But the big payoff is you talked about probate and you talked about the Bleak House and how horrible probate is. If you set up a trust and you fund it properly, you avoid probate.
Which
is the main reason most people set up a revocable trust in the first place.
Very good. Well, Tom, thank you so much for being with us here today. A real learning experience. And if you want to hear this again, remember all of our shows are archived on our homepage at federalnewsradio.com. And so you can listen to this show or any previous show. And we are going to give, Tom, if you give your email address again, please, the world's longest.
My email address is T-O-R-O-U-R-K-E, O-R-O-U-R-K-E, at Miles Stockbridge, MilesStockbridge.com.
Okay, and we will also have that in the column tomorrow, too, so people can refer to it. So thanks again, Tom, for being with us. We're going to get you back. Remember, folks, pay your taxes. Even if you don't have the money, do something. And we'll see you here next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week.
WFED, Washington. WWFD, Frederick. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics.
Is telework a goal or a reality for your organization? Learn what you and your agency need to know at the Telework Center on federalnewsradio.com, keyword telework, sponsored by Tanberg.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
President Obama has made his new nuclear posture public. He's proposing measures to reduce and eventually eliminate existing nuclear arsenals. He wants to strengthen the non-proliferation treaty and halt proliferation of nuclear weapons to additional states. And also, he wants to prevent terrorists from acquiring nuclear weapons or materials. And he's also placing heavy emphasis on the black market that feeds illicit programs. I'm J.J. Green.
When you board a plane, do you look around with a curious eye? Do you wonder if the authorities know who's on board? Have the passengers been screened? Is there a threat to your safety? Airink knows the critical nature of airline security. Airink works with governments and airlines around the globe providing electronic border solutions. Utilizing one of the world's largest secure private networks, Airink ensures that passenger data has been delivered to the proper authorities so your flight is secure. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
If you work for or have worked for the federal government, I want to tell you about an organization that's been around for over 80 years. It's NARF. Organized in 1921 to protect and enhance the